This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The first smartphone was launched in 1992. It was made by IBM and nicknamed Simon. It featured a calendar, a calculator, email, even a touchscreen. But it took another 10 years for the smartphone to really take off. It was 2002, and that's when BlackBerry entered the picture. But apps didn't really hit the popular consciousness until 2007, when Apple debuted the iPhone, and along with it, a massive app store. Apps, as we all know, are small little programs that let us do almost everything. Book a flight or a table at a restaurant, buy a movie ticket or something else online, check the weather, the score, the news, watch TV show, program our DVRs, take a note, read the paper, calculate a mortgage payment or a tip, figure out what song is playing on the speaker overhead, make a bank deposit, get a date, find a place to live, get a car to pick us up. Well, you get the idea. If there's something you want to do, there's an app for that. So this hour, we look into this wonderful part of our world to see how these apps work, what people want out of them, and how the developers make money on them, considering that most of them are free. And we're going to hear from some local developers who have released or who are about to bring out two new apps. Josh Leinberger is the creator and founder of Socialtopias. That's a new social media platform targeting nightlife and entertainment in the Queen City at first, but with ambitions for worldwide domination. And you're nodding at that.
Yep.
I hit the nail on the head. Move closer to that microphone and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Martin Miller is the director of operations for Socialtopias. Haven't even gotten off the ground, and you got a staff. Good morning. Good morning, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Woody Jones is founder of Shop Squared, which helps to automate, facilitate, and manage online shopping. It's a success story that came out of the Great Recession, and one Woody somehow misguidedly credits this program and NPR for providing the kickstart he needed to create his app and his company. We'll hear that story later, but welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Let me turn your microphone on. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Mohammed Shihab is associate professor in the Department of Software and Information Systems in the College of Computing and Informatics at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
to see you. Although the number of apps changes every day, the most recent numbers that I could find say there are over 1.4 million Android apps available, more than 1.2 million Apple apps available. And Windows Phone has 300,000, which is why I can't make the switch. So let me start with a basic question. Does the world need another app? I'd like to hear from all four of you. Go ahead.
There is always room. There is always room for new apps. I think the recent year you saw that Apple rolled out this iHealth or the health platform. So you will see more and more apps in the health platform. Plus, retailers now are in the retail market. They are trying to track the users in the stores, and there is a lot of potential going on. Like for example, when you look at Macy's, for example, they are rolling out the beacons or these Bluetooth devices that they are going to roll out to actually track the customers and the customer interest.
Let me take Macy's off my list.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to come back to talk.
So you can see that there is a lot of potential. And plus the computing device now is with the user, moving with the user. So there will be a lot of apps. This is not going to end.
I want to come back to beacons in a second because I think that's kind of creepy. But the folks over here who are developers are going to tell me, of course the world needs another app. Am I right?
Absolutely.
In a way.
Well, and it's a
in
matter,
a way.
It's a matter of focus as well. Part of what we're seeing is that with technology comes a greater ability to meet specific needs. And the focus, the refining, the redefining the capabilities is part of why we see so many new apps coming out.
Okay. All right. For those who don't have smartphones or tablets, what exactly is an app? Let's get really basic here. What is it?
It's a program that runs on a computing device, and the computing device is getting smaller and smaller, and becomes your phone now. And so it's a program.
So how is it different from the programs, the legacy programs that we've known from desktop computers, Windows or Apple computers?
Of course, it has several challenges. For example, the computing capability of the device is limited compared to the desktop. But while now it's getting better and better. Also, plus there is energy and power constraints. Also, the device has a lot of sensors. For example, you have geolocation sensors. You have gyroscopes, which give you directions. Also, it has also light sensors and several sensors. Also, it has a mic and has a camera that moves with you. So the interesting thing about the apps here is that the apps that can capture context. Where are you? They are now trying to know what are you doing? Are you sleeping well or not sleeping well? Mm-hmm. Are you in a room that is crowded or not crowded? So there are... The computing concepts are somehow similar, but the challenges are different. You know?
Now, as you were talking, you were waving around your iPhone, and you're a professor of this. You teach others. I'm not being critical. You teach other students about how to develop apps and all kinds of other computing technologies, and you've chosen to use an iPhone. And as I said, there are 1.2 million apps for Apple products, but 1.4 million for Android. Why aren't you on the bandwagon here?
I have two phones.
You have two phones.
Yes. So I decided to come here with my iPhone, but I have an Android phone. The Nexus 5 is a very good phone. But anyway, I'm not advertising for Google, but yes, I have two phones. Actually, the course is taught in Android, and it has some history behind that because of the required background. Android is mainly programmed in Java, and most of the students have this kind of background, so I can build on that background. Mm-hmm. But in iOS, they need to learn other programming languages like Objective-C or the new Swift language. So this would hinder at least the main target of the course or the our direction. But we are developing a new track which has iOS in it. And
now, I have read that most developers like to develop for Apple first, although there are more Android phones in the world. And I'm just curious as to why, because Apple is very restrictive in what you can and cannot do. And Android, it's kind of like the Wild West. Whatever, put it up there, slap it on the wall, see if it sticks. Why have you both developed for iPhone first?
Correct. I'm using Apple as my platform right now. One, cost constraints. We wanted to put out Apple first because, one, the research has shown that people spend more money people who have Apple iPhones spend more money on apps.
Suckers.
Probably more blindly too.
More blindly?
Yeah.
I mean, how so?
I'd say the sheer volume of Apple users for iPhones is, it's more of a marketing thing for Apple. I love the user experience on Apple phones. Uh-huh. I think the Droid is a little bit more, usable for people who are more tech savvy and who enjoy the actual functionality of a app. But Apple's just very, very simple, very clean, very crisp. So, I mean, there's definitely benefits to both. So I think there are.
Part of it's the quality. You know, Apple has – they won't allow an app to be on their site unless they've reviewed it and accepted it. So there is a quality aspect there.
So if you've done an app for Apple, is it then easy to make it an Android app or to make it a Windows phone app? Because I'm told that Windows is fairly restrictive about what you can do as well.
It depends on how you create the app. Mm-hmm.
Meaning what?
You might correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, go ahead.
But depending on what language you use, you may have to restart from scratch, developing a whole new app, or you may be able to...
I think for a software developer, the challenge is not actually building the app, it's actually designing it. Yes. So if you spent a lot of time designing an app in whatever platform, and you have perfected that design and you tested it and you have some kind of user database feedback from users, then you can transform it to another platform. What happens is that you just map it to another platform, meaning that you sit down and you code it into the other platform. Also, there are platforms now that you code in a single language and they can port into all platforms. Mm.
So when you say design, you're talking about how it physically works. When you push this button, it does this.
That's part of it. And what does it look like? What is the user? What's the expected user behavior? This takes a lot of time because it is based on a lot of usability work.
What's the challenge? Because do you write your own code?
I mean, our company does, not me personally, okay, but I'd like to touch just user experience. This is what this touches on, and this is such an important thing to me because part of the reason that I started developing Socialtopias a while back was the frustration with kind of the no fingers pointed, but the manipulation and kind of the things that would pop up that I didn't want to pop up and I didn't choose to. The things that would happen that I didn't choose
when you were using other apps.
Exactly. A user experience should be 100% user determined. I don't believe it's really existed in its purest form yet. So user experience is just – it's kind of the underlying idea.
Give me an example of what might pop up that you didn't like when it popped up.
I mean, I guess not to be
– ads.
pop-ups. You know, the ads actually – you know, you should have a decision to have that pop-up come up, an incentive to do so. You should have to unmute music as opposed to muting it. It shouldn't be invasive and you choose to go the opposite way. It should be, you know, kind of your choice and you choose to let people have certain
information. So you're coming at this from a user's point of view.
Absolutely. Well, me personally, yes. And then, you know, on the other side, they kind of help out to balance it out. But, you know, user centric.
What about you? I know you outsource the coding, but
correct.
Are you looking at this from a user's point of view or are you looking at this to maximize money coming in?
Well, honestly, a little bit of both. Yes. But to be successful, our focus is completely on the shopper, the user, okay. The end user.
Actually, there is an interesting statistic I would like to share. 20% of the apps are used only once. So the users download them, they use it once, never come back again.
I believe.
So the user, the retention is very important. And the retention has, a big part of it is the user experience. User comes in, he sees that they can relate to the app. Also, plus, there is low investment from the user's point of view. You know, the user downloads the app, he has no, or he or she has no data stored on that app. No connections, no friends, no nothing, right? So there is very low investment to actually run the app initially. So
well, I have
from the user point of view, right?
Then I have a question about that, because even though you download it and you may use it to see if you like it and you don't like it so you never use it again, there are some apps in the Android world, and that's the only world that I know about because I don't live in the Apple world. In the Android world, when you download an app, it will tell you before you install it, this app will need access to your dialer, to your contacts, yes. To your pictures, to your camera, to your microphone.
Yes. And you never read these.
I read them, and I say no, and that's the end of that.
Perfect. Perfect.
Because
all right.
I just think, why do you need all that? Why if you're a compass?
Mike,
you're a compass,
you are an exception.
But if you're a compass, why do you need why do you need access to my data, to my contacts, to my camera? Why do you need
that's
that?
That's a very good point. And the app frameworks now are changing. They are trying to ask developers why to answer this question. Uh-huh. And for example, Facebook. So there are a lot of platforms that provide apps. For example, Facebook has an app framework now. So it has been there for the past maybe 5-6 years, where you can develop apps that run on Facebook and can access your data, and it asks you about these permissions. So now, when you develop these apps, to register these apps, they ask you. During the registration phase, as a developer, it asks you, why do you need this permission? You have to declare why do you need the permission. You have to provide screenshots of the apps. And this is to help the users. But it is coming along. But, of course, we are lacking.
But I'm told that in the Apple world, some of the apps that you download do exactly the same thing. They need the same permissions.
But
Apple has made the decision for you, and you don't know.
Not really. I think Apple, it is the same framework, but it is the question, when do you ask for permission?
Yes.
So Android asks for permission during installation time, while Apple asks for permission, Apple apps ask for permission during access time. So for example, say you download the app, you don't have an idea what this app is going to require. Now the app needs to access your geolocation. So now Apple will pop up an alert box telling you, hey, this app wants geolocation. And you can make a decision now. So this also enhances the functionality of the app because now you can pick and choose what permissions to share with the app. Makes it a little bit harder for the developer because the developer has to accommodate.
I have to take a break. I'll let you comment on this, Martin, when we come back. And I also want to ask Josh about this because if you're developing your app from a user's point of view, which app, which way would you prefer?
I definitely have a perspective on this. So
okay.
We're
coming right back. And we'll talk about Socialtopias and about Shop Squared in particular in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Diamonds Direct South Park, offering certified diamonds from their own diamond cutters in Tel Aviv, including rare colored diamonds and fancy cut diamonds from 1 carat to 10 carats. Sharon Road across from South Park Mall, diamonds-direct.com. And Boatsman Gilmore Wagner, offering accounting, tax, and financial advisory services for local businesses with offices in Charlotte and Huntersville, Lake Norman areas. Boatsman Gilmore Wagner. Last month, the president fulfilled his promise to proceed with immigration reform with or without Congress, and so without Congress, he's moved on. And some have said the move is unconstitutional. We're going to take a look at the order that he's issued, which questions both immigration reform, questions about both immigration reform and whether the executive branch has overstepped its bounds, tomorrow at 9. Does that make any sense? Because I just made all that.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Cuba releases American contractor Alan Gross. After 5 years imprisonment on espionage charges, the U.S. releases three Cubans in exchange. Details and the future of U.S.-Cuban relations.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Josh Lineberger is here. He's the creator and founder of Social Topias. It's a new app that, as I'm told, will debut on New Year's Eve, which we'll talk about. Martin Miller is the director of operations for that organization. Woody Jones is here, the founder of Shop Squared, another new app about shopping online. And Mohammed Shahab is an associate professor in the Department of Software and Information Systems in the College of Computing and Informatics at UNC Charlotte, a long title. We were talking about permissions that apps require. Some you know about in the Android world. They will tell you before you install it, this is what we need access to. In the Apple world, you install the app, and when you use the app, I'm told, it then asks you, well, we need your location information, or we need access to your camera, yes or no. And you had something you wanted to jump in there about that, Martin.
Just to add to what the professor was saying, on the Apple side, it will ask for those permissions when you launch the app. The nice thing is, and one of the things easier for us as we start that privacy discussion, is the fact that you can always change those settings. If you say, okay, yeah, you can use my camera, and then you decide, wait a minute, why are they using my camera on the iOS platform? You can go back and say, don't use my camera. I don't want you doing that to us.
And how do you know when you say no that the app – How do you know that the app knows that no means no? There's the question.
Because of Apple's approval process, because of that that torture sometimes for us that we go through with Apple to say, okay, we're following not only Apple's rules, but we're doing what we say we're going to do.
Now,
they do that testing.
Josh, you mentioned that you designed your app to be to get rid of all the irritants that you, as a user of apps.
I definitely have a few points that
talk about
quickly.
That.
The main thing I want to talk about here is transparency. It's kind of nobody really knows what's going on nowadays within the app world. They don't understand if, you know, even people who aren't trying to manipulate the user, which I'm not saying these apps do, but, you know, it can happen. They don't really know what's going on. Confusion. Mm-hmm. And there's another issue as well, kind of the muddying up of the app market because of these different sites that actually are, you know, templated, very cookie cut, where you can create an app and not put much care and attention into it. So it's kind of a quality over quantity thing. So right now, I think apps are very much quantity. I don't think the actual thought and time goes into developing an idea that's more an aggregate of 10 of these different apps to kind of accomplish things that, you know, an app right now couldn't do. There's another problem with loyalty. These apps come out as these great products. They don't have ads. They don't have any, you know, I guess, obvious manipulation, which, you know, I don't want to speak too poorly about, but then all of a sudden, a year later, they sell their site, and then it becomes exactly like every other app. So a year of commitment to this app, and all of a sudden, you turn around, and now, I mean, why would I continue committing to these apps if I continue just losing the actual quality and the, you know, original product that was made by the company?
So you've sworn, with your app at least, that's not going to happen. As we go, as a year down the road, it's not going to change because you found a way to monetize it in a different way. You're not going to change it.
Yeah, I mean, and we try to find that continual balance between the two. I'm kind of the voice of the user.
So there's been a lot of criticism in the Windows world when Windows, I think it was Windows Vista, came out. It was asking for permission to do everything. You'd do something and it would ask you for permission, and it drove people crazy. So they stopped that in Windows 7. They stopped it. They don't ask you anymore. In the Apple world, on the app world, it asks you for permission when you launch the app to do certain things. Mm-hmm. Is that not an irritant?
I think if there's an actual explanation as to why, maybe not initially, but what I'm actually hoping to do is provide monthly updates as far as what data is being used. And, you know, you see that you have chosen to use that data, what it's going to, and what value you're receiving back for it. Because in the end, without users, there's no site and there's no app. So acknowledging the user or the value that the users bring to this and saying your data is very valuable and giving them transparency, as I said before, to kind of understand what permissions you need and justifying why you need that permission. Like you said earlier, you know, some just don't make sense.
Woody, Shop Squared is a shopping app, and we'll talk about exactly what it does and kind of how it works. But it seems to me, as I read through the information about it, it needs to know certain things in order to work.
Absolutely.
It needs to know connections. It needs to know your friends, your family. It needs to know who you're shopping for. It needs to know what you're looking for. It needs to know where you want to buy, where you want to look for it. It needs to not coagulate, but it needs to concentrate all that information to make decisions, right?
Correct.
How private is that? How concerned should I be about that?
Not very, hopefully. The way we've designed
it... Not very concerned or not very private?
Not very concerned,
okay.
But the way we've designed it is you actually recreate your contact list. You go in and pull people from your phone contact list, put it into our app, and those are the only people that we have access to. But our intent is not to be intensive in using your information, but only for the shopper. We don't want to sell your information. We don't want to... That's not how we gain value. Our value is in that trust with the user.
Now, I think, Doctor, you said that most apps are used once. People download them, they look at them, they
20%.
They never look at them again. They're gone. They uninstall them in some cases. So, Woody, Martin, Josh, research from the information technology research and advisory firm Gartner predicts that app developers are unlikely to be financially successful. They say that by 2018, less than 0.01% of consumer mobile apps will be considered financial successes by their own developers. Had you heard these figures before this morning?
We've heard every horror story there might possibly be in app development.
Absolutely.
And it points back to an issue that we've really been walking around in this conversation, and it's responsibility to the user. If we fulfill first a need, we talked about design earlier in the conversation. If we fill a user's need to accomplish something, and we do it honestly and with integrity across all of these permissions and these accesses that we're talking about, then it's incumbent upon us to also communicate, here's how we plan to make money off of this. We sat down with 35 of our early adopters last night and said, okay, here's what we want from you. Here's why we need this from you. We have to be viable long term. This is a job for a lot of people. So the idea is that we look for ways to make money that then respect the user, that teach the user, and put them together with the businesses that make sense for them and in their lifestyle without being intrusive.
You're a radio guy, aren't you?
I am, yes, sir.
That's what I thought. You have a radio talk show elsewhere. But I don't think you answered my question.
He's a radio guy.
Did you think about not making any money?
We think about it constantly. We have a body of investors that ask regularly, how are we going to make money? And that's really how I came into the project. Great idea. The users love what Josh came up with many years ago and has been discussing for some time. And then the question came in, how do we make money? How are we going to survive long term and pay the people that are committed to this?
Yeah, because it's a catch-22. I mean, you need money to make an app, but you need users to make money. So it's kind of this... almost, a cyclical game you have to play to go back and forth to figure out a way to do that.
You debut on New Year's Eve.
Correct.
And I'm told that you have about $4 million in this app.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Hokey smokes.
Yeah.
Bullwinkle. I mean, really? $4 million?
Mm-hmm. Necessary, I believe.
This is like a Broadway show. Will you ever recoup your investment? Does it scare you? Do you stay up night? Do you think about this?
After 5 or 6 years of this, I'm kind of, I tell other people I feel numb to it kind of, but it's just, being immersed in it every day for so long.
Better be a happy New Year's.
But, I mean, we have great people in the right places. It's more and more as we move forward. I mean, I overuse the word blessed, but I mean, we really do have such great people involved in this, and we have the right people. So, I mean, the more and more that we move forward, the more I feel confident about it.
What does it cost you, Woody, to develop your app so far?
So far, it's all self-financed. We're very low budget.
Okay.
Once we release and get our first app out there and hopefully see some revenue, I think we'll probably try to build some more and look for some money.
Do both of you plan to have these apps free to the consumer?
Always.
Correct.
Always.
Always.
That's a good thing, because the same report that I just cited says that there's a huge number of free quality mobile apps, meaning that consumers are now biased against paying for an app, even 99 cents. They don't want to pay even 99 cents for this.
Yes.
I agree.
And I've never paid for an app.
We went round and
probably
round.
Won't.
And so you're contributing to the problem.
Yes, I am.
We went round and round on our business model on how to make that work, and free, it has to be free, and you may have some upgrades, and that's part of our model, is to have some upgrades. If you want more functionality, you pay for them.
Actually, nothing is for free, if you think about it, right? So you as a customer, your data, you are giving them your data. Plus, also, there are interesting studies about free apps and the power that they use. You know,
I mean, you're not necessarily giving them your data if you do the app properly. I think we're trying to do something different here. We're trying to, you know, I guess, shift the paradigm, if you will. We believe that if you don't want to use your data in any way other than, you know, a couple non-personally identifiable pieces of information, you shouldn't have to. But I mean, at the same time, rather than this, one of the big issues I feel too in the app market is these light versions of apps. You buy a light version for free, then all of a sudden they, you know, continually pop up ads and they force you into this kind of, well, you got to buy the premium. And it's just kind of, it's annoying until you do so. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like users should be funneled into something. I feel that they should be given the option to use a site without using data. And then you show them a better, more credible, more usable site with data as well. So it's valuable either way. And you don't force them into a situation. You just, the main thing is trying to earn their trust long term, and that's difficult nowadays.
So let's talk about your apps, because we've been tap dancing around these two locally produced apps. Yours premieres New Year's Eve. When does yours go online? Do you know yet?
It's in probably March. We don't have a set date yet.
Josh, you come, I'm told, from a family of doctors and dentists. Your father's an anesthesiologist. One of your brothers, is that right?
My father's an anesthesiologist. Grandfather was. My oldest brother's an orthodontist. My middle brother's a dentist.
And here you are in Socialtopia.
You're going to ask me how I got here? I have no idea.
Well, actually, I know how your bio says you got here, because school was not for you. You didn't like it. And mm-hmm. so you kind of went into the bartending world, the nightlife world, where you noticed how people function with their smartphones in these environments, and you came up with a better idea.
Yeah, I guess just to keep it simple, my life for this could be pre-service industry, post-service industry.
Okay.
Not that I would condone or advocate not going to college. For me, it luckily worked out. I didn't plan this. But the one thing I noticed when I went to the service industry was this chaotic world that was strangely unified. It was kind of a comfort and uncertainty sort of thing. So I don't know. It was a different side of life that I hadn't really experienced yet. I was always control, 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 step by step. And you kind of go into this uncertain world that has almost this freedom to it. So I started I watched it closer. And I saw many, many opportunities to connect it in a better way. Over 9 years, I bartended at a bunch of different places.
But you saw that people would come to these places with their friends, mm-hmm. sometimes without their friends, but even with their friends. And I witnessed this last night at a restaurant. Two people sitting at a table. Both of them put their phones on the table and then went right to their phones for the whole evening, even while the food was there. They didn't talk to each other. They didn't look at each other. They were just looking at their phones. And I'm thinking, you don't like the other person?
They might have texted each other.
So, but you were noticing that, and you kind of came up with an idea how to use social media and these apps mm-hmm. to get people to come together and then put away their phones.
Yeah.
Are you mad? Put away my phone?
If you're gonna be there, be there.
Okay. Sort of thing, so how does your app achieve that?
And the mentality is largely utilizing the digital world to better enhance your physical life as opposed to existing within a digital world, because it becomes a facade. So we want to get you on our app, and as opposed to many, many websites and apps right now, we don't want to keep you on there. We don't want to, you know, lock you on there without you knowing it. We want to get you to the places you want to go with the people you want to go with, allow those places to reach back out to you in a very simple way. Obviously, it's much more holistic than this. And then get you off the phone and experience it. And then when you want to transition to the next point, get back on your phone, and we'll help you get to the next place all the way to getting home safely at the end. So it's more
So take me through this. I'm sitting at home.
Okay.
I'm lonely. I'm sad. My world is empty without you, babe. And so I take out my smartphone, mm-hmm. and I touch the Utopia, Socialtopia app, what do I see? What happens?
You'll have a few options. I mean, you can go right to our map if you want to search different destinations just to find a specific place that just fits your night perfectly. You can go into the actual network of our app and start communicating with friends who want to go out that night as well. Start building a plan. Start figuring out where you want to go as you're looking for destinations that have deals, because they can set up deals very real time. So that night they can be sending them out. So one of those two options you can get on, and you, because each night's different. One night you might be going out for kind of a chill drink. The other night you might be going out for a bachelor party. And the site should adjust to that and allow you to isolate down to the point of that perfect point of, you know, where you want to go, who you want to go with, and get out and go do it. So it's kind of, as opposed to nowadays in the digital world, I feel like it doesn't accomplish much. There's no end point. With us, there's always trying to get to an end point to get back out into the physical world.
So this is a world inside this app that combines Facebook and Twitter and Yelp and OpenTable and Flickster and all these other things, individual apps, into one. You're communicating with people. Hey, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Let's see what's out there tonight. Let's choose this.
I would word it a little bit differently than that. I would say all the capabilities and functions on those sites, all of social media right now, we have approached, evolved, and aggregated together in a simple user experience so that now you can accomplish all those things even better, mm-hmm. all at once, one-stop shop sort of thing, and not have to go to, 10 different apps. So it's not what those do. It's actually the evolution of those ideas as well, and then put together in a very simple way. It's hard to explain that to people for them to say, oh, so you can do all those things, and it's simple. I don't believe it.
Well, this is your idea. Martin, you've come on board to be the operations manager or the director of operations for this. How long did it take you for you to understand it? Because I don't think I understand.
It takes quite a while. I mean, the first conversation was about 4 hours, and I had to take a nap after that. So it really boils down to user intention. What do they want to accomplish? Because, so many times we see the phone becoming the focus, and it's not about the phone. The phone should be a tool to get out and be social, to get in front of people and have a conversation across the dinner table, as opposed to having text messaging back and forth. So to answer your earliest question in this, the first thing you would see when you open Socialtopia is our intentions page. What do you want to do? What are you trying to accomplish? And we see from our research three major things. One, explore something you've never done before. Two, go out with people you already know and research, hey, I want to go to this place that we already know, but let's look at this place as well, and then also start a conversation.
So if I'm sitting at home alone and I decide I want to go out and I get on your app and I decide who I want to go out with, what happens on the other end of this transaction? In other words, I choose you.
Yes.
I'm gonna go to a bar with you, and I choose you. Your phone is sitting in your pocket or on a table someplace. What happens?
Two ways it'll happen. Number one, you would make a plan. Say, okay, we're going out for steak this evening. I want Martin to come with me. Okay. So I'm going to build a plan, put Martin in it. Martin gets a notification. Hey, let's go out and have steak together. The other possibility is you start a conversation with me saying, I'd like to go get steak. Who else should go with us? You're going to get a notification. You're going to have the opportunity within the Socialtopia
network. How is that different from Facebook?
It's hard for us not to talk about Facebook and get a little bit aggressive, but it's real time. It's an opportunity to have a conversation that is about going out as opposed to exposing all of your intentions to everybody else.
Okay. Well, how's that different from texting? How's it different from a phone call? We have to take a break. I'll come back in a second. We'll get an answer to that. And then we'll talk about Shop Squared with Woody Jones at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Compact Car Service, providing full service for all Honda and Acura vehicles in Charlotte since 1980. 6177 East Independence Boulevard, compactcarservice.net. And AeroChem Incorporated, a family-owned chemical blender, providing chemical solutions to local industry for over 30 years. Information on their product line and contract services at AeroChem.com. Cuba releases American contractor Alan Gross after 5 years imprisonment on espionage charges. The U.S. releases several Cubans in exchange, and we're going to build an embassy and reopen diplomatic relations. Details on the prisoner swap and the future of U.S.-Cuban relations, the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes on The Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, there are several apps for that, Facebook or Twitter. Or charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're coming right back.
Hi, it's Ray from Car Talk with a great suggestion on how to end the year with a good feeling and with a little extra cash in your pocket. And no, it doesn't involve grabbing a handful of coins from the Salvation Army bucket. We want you to donate your old car to this station. Do it by December 31st and you'll get a tax deduction and help pay for the programs you love. Here's how.
Donate your car through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program. Call 1-866-789-8627.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about apps, and we have a Twitter question out there for people on Twitter. What makes a new app appealing to you? You can talk to us on Twitter or Facebook, and you may hear your opinion on the air. Well, I got a whole bunch of them right here, which I'll read in a second. Josh Leinberger is here, creator and founder of Socialtopias. Martin Miller is his director of operations. Woody Jones is the founder of Shop Squared, which we will talk about this segment. By gosh. And Mohammed Shahab is an associate professor in the Department of Software and Information Systems at UNC Charlotte. Just to wrap this up, how is that different? How is what your app, Socialtopias, does? I can't say it. How is what your app does different from texting, instant messaging, making a phone call, a conference call, a three-way call? How is it different? And how is it different from some of the other apps out there that do all these things? That just may not do all of them.
First, it concentrates everything into a single app, and it also concentrates it into a single transaction. You'd ask about a phone call before the break, and if it's just you and I, phone call is probably an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. But if it's two or three or four or five or 10 of us, as we're finding in the demographic, then it's a single transaction rather than 10 phone calls or, you know, two three-way calls and then calling a restaurant to see if they've got a special and, you know, Googling to try to find a coupon. We're consolidating all of that into one app and one transaction.
So if you decide to go to a restaurant and they have a coupon, it will be on your app.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Well, if they do it through our app, it will be on our app. Obviously, that kind of goes without saying. But and one thing I do want to point out, you know, we do use the word app right now, but our site is large. It's a seamless platform between the website, mm-hmm. and both types of apps. I really, from the beginning, I said that I wanted somebody to be able to go to the public library, sign up for the site, print out their little ID stamp, and be able to use the product just like anybody with a smartphone, because apps kind of leave out a huge demographic of people who don't have those phones. So any way you want to use it, the actual platform itself is very, very similar in all three types, just kind of simplified within the actual phone app. So
you stole that idea from Satya Nadella at Microsoft, is that right?
Also, Mike, apps, talking on the phone's not cool anymore. Actually, kids just don't do it.
About apps, not effective.
About
not
successful efficient. Apps in North Carolina, there is an app which is called Wed Picks, and it allows. It says so. The idea is, how do you monetize social interaction? You know, that's they are not building apps for the good of. It's not for welfare, right? It's basically they are trying to make money out of these apps.
Sure,
so basically,
absolutely.
How do you monetize the social interaction? So, for example, you go to weddings, you take pictures. Everybody takes pictures using their phones. They go home. And maybe people forget to send new pictures and so on. So WebPix came in and they said, okay, we can monetize the social interaction by... This is a North Carolina-built app, and it's a successful app, multi-million dollar also investment. And you go to the wedding, you take pictures using their app framework, and you share it with everybody in the wedding. At the end of the day, you have this photo album of the wedding.
Everybody has.
Everybody. So everybody gets access to it, because at the end of the day, you're going to send the link to the invitees. The link has the pictures of the wedding anyway.
And so what is that? How
do they make money?
Pay for that?
The user gets it for free, but they pay money through what? Through one, they can limit the number of pictures, and then you can extend it. That's one. Also, printing pictures.
Ah.
You know, that's a big business. So printing pictures or gifts with pictures, and you can gift people and so on. So,
do you mind if I comment really quick on that? It's just, I think it's that and everybody has this mentality right now, and I completely understand why, but it's that mentality that has kind of, I think, taken ideas and made them fall short of what they could be. Mm-hmm. You obviously have to monetize, but I think people are too quick to say, I want to create an app to make money. I want to create a website to make billions. It's kind of, you have to have a pure intent initially.
So let me go to Woody here, because Woody's been relatively quiet. let's talk about Shop Squared. You were an architect.
And still am.
And still are. And the recession hit, and there were no buildings to build.
A real architect, and one that builds buildings.
That's right. You're responsible for helping to design the Piedmont Town Center over at South Park, and a building called the Mint, which is going up right now. But the recession kind of ended a lot of building for a long time.
Correct.
So you were looking for something to do, and we did a show on this program about apps.
Correct.
You heard that show, and that was your inspiration.
He was on that show.
I was on the show.
So that was your inspiration. I'm so sorry for you.
it had something to do with it, absolutely.
So you came up, I know that you're working with your father-in-law, is that right, on this?
Correct.
Which makes your wife happy.
Well, sometimes.
So Shop Squared is a shopping app. What does it do?
It is put together to manage your shopping experience, basically make it easier and simpler for you to make your purchases. We have, four basic functions, and that's mm-hmm. where we get the name Shop Squared. We have an event manager, a wish list, a price shopper, and a budget manager. And we seamlessly work those three together, or four together.
So let's talk about it. Let's begin with the wish list. That's where you put in things that you would like to have bought for you or by yourself.
All the above.
Because it's not just you. You're talking about getting people, like families involved, or correct. Even using this for like weddings.
Mm-hmm. Instead of putting it as a registry.
Yeah, absolutely. You could use it as a registry for the wedding, or you could just use it as your Christmas list, correct?
Right. You create lists for yourself, name it whatever you want, and create an event. Or you can invite others to create a list and share that back with you. And you can share that list with whoever's on your contact list.
So they would put, and you would put, things that you desire to buy at some point in the future on this list. That's on the wish list. Then the price shopper part of this.
Once you put items on the list, we'll go out and search those items for a price. And we'll come back. And when you log it in, it comes in as a price. Mm-hmm. So and when that price changes, we can monitor that and send you an alert that says, okay, the price dropped. Do you want to purchase it now? Mm-hmm. Or your event is in 6 months. You still want us to keep searching until your event happens.
Mm-hmm. And the budget manager part, that's where you tell it how much I'm willing to spend? Is that what you're telling it?
Right. When you create a budget for per person or per event. So if I have a Christmas list, I have all my children on there. Mm-hmm. I've created a list for them. And so I have so much money per person, and it'll tell me, okay, I've bought five items, I'm over my budget.
So are you using Google and Bing and some other search engines for price to find the right price?
Good question. Google quit offering their free API. So now we're going to other options we're going to have to pay to get access to that. There are a few free ones out there, but the ones out there right now are not.
So in terms of privacy, if I want to participate, you have to know what it is I want to buy and what I'm willing to pay for it. That's valuable information, it seems to me, to some retailers. Does that information go to those retailers? And if so, does it go anonymously?
No, it does not. Right now, it's all in-house. We don't intend for any information to go out. We want to... To us, that's a value to our users. We don't want to sell that information.
But does a human being see that information, or is it simply an algorithm that sees that information, if that's the right word to use?
We'll use that information to help you. The more information you give us, the better we can help you.
Who's your competition?
Right now, we haven't seen an app that combines all these four functions. We've done a fair amount of research. There are several apps that do one or two, but none that can combine all four.
In both your cases, in terms of Shop Squared and in terms of Socialtopias, how do you test this? Because it seems to me that you'll only know if this really works if you've got a substantial number of users. So how do you test it before it goes online so that you don't give the first users a really bad experience?
Well, our model is built on... Well, research. The average person who uses an iPhone purchases at least 26 items a year.
Okay.
So if we get somebody that starts to use our app, we're expecting a certain number of purchases. Probably not that many, but we can budget a certain number.
But how do you know what kind of bandwidth, or I'm not using the right words, but how do you know how much bandwidth or server space you need to do what you need to do? If you have 10 people, it's going to be different if you have 100,000 people doing this.
It's absolutely. Right now, we're small. We're starting out. Right. So server size is small, but it will ramp up over time.
A lot of the app developers now, they use cloud space, kind of cloud space, like, for example, Amazon Services, or the upcoming Parse.com, another framework. So these frameworks, they advertise that they can scale, and you can purchase more hits or more space as you go. So you can start small and then grow.
So who do you see as your users for your app, ShopSquare?
The business professional, anyone who's busy, too busy to manage their purchases.
Anybody who buys stuff.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Men who hate shopping in the real world. Yeah.
Busy moms, professional women. Women do most of the shopping in general.
And it does strike me as a great way to do your Christmas list, a great way to do your wedding, or any special event, maybe a graduation party.
Permit warming.
Yeah, it seems like a great way. Who are your users going to be? Who do you see as your users?
Overall, I define them as the socially active. And that's one thing that separates us from Facebook that we didn't mention earlier is the fact that, you know, Facebook, largely people are on there not being truly socially active. They're kind of posting pictures of food, weddings, and that's necessary and has its own purpose. But we are a site that, I guess, plays to the socially active. From initially, we're going to do 20 to 34 will probably be our main demographic. Nightlife is very fickle, very trendy. So we feel if we hit that market first, we can hit any market.
You're looking for social media users who are not going to only be social on social media. You want social media users who will use that to get out.
We're looking for social media users who are sick of the old social media sites right now, who are sick of being, you know, manipulated like we've been talking
about.
And
you have said that social media sites and apps that people are using right now give a user experience that is a thin, pretty layer of wrapping paper on a huge gift that these sites get to keep. Is that the data?
It is the data, and because they sell it to third-party companies as opposed to filtering it back into yourself to create a more credible site. So I feel like, as opposed to quickly just selling it to get money, why not create a long-term, you know, viable site?
How will you monetize this? How will you make money on ShopSquared?
Part of it is through affiliates. People like Amazon, Target, they pay me to funnel people to their sites.
Do you know they will? Have you already been?
Absolutely.
Okay, mm-hmm. You've been in discussions.
There's a certain percentage they'll give you based on volume. And then also we have upgrades. Mm-hmm. We will eventually add more and more items, more than just four, I'm hoping.
And for those upgrades, you would expect the user to chip in?
More than likely, yes.
A 99 cents or whatever? And what if they don't? What if they like it just the way the free app is?
Then we make money through affiliates. Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard all of you complain about these ads that pop up. Now, I don't know what the world in Apple is like, but I don't have a problem with it because the banner ad that I see on most of the apps that I have, because I haven't paid for any of them, is tiny. I mean, it's there. I'm aware that it's there. I've clicked on one or two because I actually was interested in what they were selling. But for the most part,
actually,
I ignore them.
You are thinking that you are not paying for them. But there is research that shows that free apps which have advertisements, they communicate over the network. So to get these advertisements, they communicate over the network.
Okay.
Communicating over the network is one of the most expensive things power-wise on the device. So it depletes the power, and thus you have to charge your phone. So if you keep your phone for like four or five years, if you calculate the amount of cost that you are paying, charge your phone.
Yes.
We're working for the energy companies.
You are paying for the app anyway.
But now, wait a minute. They're communicating over the network only when I turn the app on, right?
It depends on how the app is designed. Some
really?
Apps,
well,
yes.
That could explain why I have to charge my phone at 3 o'clock. Because I have a lot of apps on this phone.
Actually, about monetizing the app, I have a question, just a quick question, related to Sociotopia and also maybe ShopSquare. So monetizing apps has been done by Groupon, for example. And there is a very big success at the beginning. But then Groupon, when it went to IPO, it didn't do very well. So what do you think? So this is a big experiment based on Groupon. And how do you compare to Groupon? And so you are trying to do something similar to Eventful and Groupon together, you know, or right?
That's a small aspect of our site, but I'll pass over to Martin on this one.
One of the things that gets lost in app development is good business sense. So many times people get excited about the technology and what they can do in the phone and how it will look and who they will become. And it's a matter of going back to core business sense. A lot of times businesses lose sight of promoting themselves to people who are going to come back to them. The Groupon results in a lot of people coming into an establishment that are just there because it's half price and will never come back for that steak again. The goal for us is to make the relationship between someone who is going to be good for that destination and is going to come back again and again and enjoy it each time. So that's the key.
So let me share with you some answers to the Twitter question we posed: what makes a new app appealing to you? If the app is built for me rather than the software developer, says Jay on Facebook. Ken on Facebook: the problem with most apps is that they're designed by and for urban hipsters who spend their lives swimming in a sea of Wi-Fi hotspots and 4G coverage. Constant connectivity is not a reality for those of us who get out of sight of the coffee shop every once in a while. Question for Socialtopia is from Twitter: what kind of destination will I be able to find on your app very quickly?
Initially, it's going to be destinations as in restaurants, bars. We're trying to keep the line very clear to start out with so it doesn't muddy up, and they have to claim their page so that it is credible. So you'll be able to find places to go have dinner, have a drink with a friend.
Theaters, arenas, stadiums.
Okay. Eventually, you know, bleeding out into those as well.
And Stephen on Facebook, on our website, says, Dr. Shahab, does the Internet of Things coupled with mobile apps provide the greatest area of growth in the app sphere? Also, what kind of security problem does this pose?
A lot of problems. A lot of issues. Privacy, now you are not only sharing information about directly about yourself, but your interactions, your context. A lot of the Internet of Things, for example, the bands that you can put around your arm, they can get your blood pressure, a lot of information. So there is a lot of privacy and security issues related to that. Also, we talked about beacons. We didn't have time to talk about that.
But, yeah.
But anyway, so they can also track your fine location, not only outside the buildings, but also inside buildings or indoor tracking, which is a big business. It's going to
So in other words, if you have Bluetooth on your device, Macy's, because you mentioned them, you'll be able to follow you around their store?
They can, yes. They can follow you. It's like, you know, like cookie tracking in the page. They are trying to do it in the store.
People tracking.
People tracking, yes.
Oh, how exciting.
I promised something. So, Charlotte,
we're out of time. That's another show.
We'll come back.
Mohammed Shahab, professor at the UNC Charlotte in the Computer and Informatics Department. Woody Jones, founder of Shop Squared, which debuts in March. Josh Leinberger, the creator and founder. And Martin Middle, the director of operations for Socialtopias, which goes live online on New Year's Eve. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte